Welcome to another episode of Getting Juicy. I'm Hero Prince.
And I am Rachel Rosen.
We are so excited to come together every week for our little shindig or powwow or, I don't know, fresh squeeze content. I don't know what I'm going on, but hey, I'm going to roll with it.
Who knows? Mm-hmm. Whoever knows what's in your brain and mine as well.
I know.
We don't know what comes out of our mouths.
I know. Lots of pets going on, that's for sure.
Okay. Right. Lots ahead.
there is lots ahead.
Yeah. Wow. I lost my train of thought. I was just going to mention to everybody who might be watching this on YouTube that we do always share all of our episodes on every podcast platform you can imagine. Yeah, I've obviously been staring at my computer all day long for work, so I have to apologize for my poor speech. And also, if you're listening to this, we are on YouTube. I did just mention YouTube. Yes, we do have a YouTube channel. So Getting Juicy with Rachel and Hero on YouTube, and you can actually see, unfortunately not smell and touch us, but you can see us and our guests. And lastly, one more thing. We actually have featured ourselves on buymeacoffee.com. So once again, I'm reading this off a freaking piece of paper because we've just started to spout this off. buymeacoffee.com/gettingjuicy. And hey, a penny, I don't even know if a penny even exists anymore. 5 cents. just a little bit of support for yours truly so we can continue doing what we're doing.
Yes, absolutely.
That's my spiel.
I love that. You know, yeah, the podcast is definitely a passion project, but something that we want to be able to create and to develop. Ooh, that was a nice trick. And develop into a platform that really does help to increase the way of telling a story through people's lives and perspectives, especially with the Center on Mental Health and in conjunction with people that are maybe non-conforming in any way, shape, or the word to society and culture in the mainstream and outside of it. So thanks for sticking around with us as we have another exciting conversation today. Mm-hmm. And with that said, we will be chatting with Michael Yerxa, or sometimes people might just refer to Michael as just his last name, Yerxa. And Mike is a television producer, primarily in reality television from Toronto. And most, including myself, learned about who he was by being on the show known as One Girl, Five Gays on MTV. And also it was a show from 2009 to 2014, so for 5 years. And it essentially was the premise of 20 questions. And then it was for the queer, gay, male identifying community to kind of talk about love, sex, relationships, health in a very candid and open way. And they would have a rotating panel of five men hosted by, I think she was definitely a video jockey by the name of Aaliyah Jasmine, or DJ for short. And they really kind of started underground just with one season, weren't paid for the show, and then it got really popular and then became more and more and more of an impact in the queer community, the dialogue around those discussions. Apparently, I was listening to an interview just before this with Yerxa, and he went on to explain that initially the idea was about for straight couples to call in to get advice on their relationships.
From the gay community or from the...
I believe it was actually like straight couples calling in to have straight people give advice on their relationships.
Okay, wow.
That changed. That was the initial plot, I think. And then what happened was, is what about if it's, you know, straight couples calling in to gay men and gay men giving relationship advice on the straight people's relationships?
Yeah.
It then evolved, before it even hit production, it evolved into what it was, where it was the panelist type of format, right? Mm. And so with that said, Yerxa also has went on to having a background in nightlife entertainment, which I didn't do too much research on, but
on which entertainment?
Kind of like nightlife entertainment.
Oh, nightlife. Like nightlife, okay.
Scene.
Yeah.
And then also continued on to being more and more back in entertainment reality TV production by being the first season producer and storytelling production of Drag Race Canada season one, and also is the producer for The Amazing Race Canada. as well as One Queen, Five Queers, which is the new kind of adaptation of One Girl, Five Gays that's hosted by Brooklyn Heights from Drag Race season 11, and also now who's the main judge, one of the main judges on Drag Race Canada currently. So
is that on right now? Is that on right now?
Yeah. So One Queen, Five Queers finished up its first season of 8 episodes on Crave. And so it's really fantastic because Mike also has such a background and understanding in mental health, giving back to the community, being a really well-spoken and, in my opinion, very sincere queer leader in the community in Toronto and beyond through the production work that he is doing. So I'm excited to chat with him, and not just about reality shows, but about mental health and about queer culture and about his story, more about unpacking behind what, you know, how he got to where he is today.
Absolutely. Well, it sounds like, and it seems like he is really involved in and immersed in advocacy and all that kind of stuff in the community too. So yeah, it's like, I was just looking at his profile as well. He's involved with something called the Rainbow Railroad. Yeah. Good Lord. Say that a million times over
very,
and over.
Very powerful.
Rainbow Railroad. Railroad. Good grief. So yeah, just, I'm really stoked to also talk to him, which should be momentarily here. Yeah. And just really neat, because this is the second, I guess, producer of us, a reality show, so more specifically even in Drag Race, the Drag Race role that we've had on the show. So, both from kind of similar backgrounds though. Isn't that interesting?
Similar. Yes.
Yeah. Just with MTV. And then we had, someone on who's from Much Music. So it was like,
that's right.
Very interesting.
It is really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. And what's really fantastic is the ability to really, like, you see people that are willing to give their time to people that are wanting to get to know who they are, what they're known for, what it is that they're doing, and just kind of really having that real dialogue. And I think that's really powerful to have that feeling of camaraderie, you know, really lifting another up. And I know that Yerxa has also talked about that in some of the other dialogues I've heard him speak about, is, you know, in the queer community, it can be quite competitive and it can be very toxic. And to be able to have people that are realizing and that understand to look above that and to lift another up, which is something I'm very much connected to, is giving back to people and providing them an opportunity to get connected or to, I don't know, establish themselves in whatever they need support with. You know, there's enough around for everybody.
Totally. I'm curious about that notion, because how the queer community can be so competitive. Do you mean in a certain industry within the queer community or just in general? Because that's like, I could see it maybe in, you know, the drag world or in that kind of realm where it's very niche. And yeah, but I never really thought of it like that. So
yeah, well, I think a lot of it, again, I'm just quoting from what I kind of heard from reference in terms of Yerxa mentioning this as well, is that, you know, as queer people, there's a sense of representation that we might see in media, and this idea of if we see someone doing it and we think we can do it better, or it's not represented in the way that we think it should be, then we automatically think, okay, well, why did they get that opportunity? Or, you know, we deserve that opportunity to be seen as well. Like, what makes that individual so special? And you mentioned the drag community as well. It's interesting. The drag kind of community in some ways has gotten quite competitive. But again, just because it's stuff that I've heard Mike talk about, the portrayal of drag queens in reality TV has also in some ways made it more accessible to people, because isn't a sense of comparison of like, oh, I can do this, I'm going to be successful.
Right? Yeah.
So there comes Mike now. Hello.
We're agreeing with everything. Hi, how are you?
Hi, how's it going?
Not too bad. Thanks for dropping by.
I'm happy to be here.
Amazing.
Happy to have you. And can you hear us okay? Can you see us?
Yeah, no problem.
Fantastic.
Like, I feel like anytime I do anything now, like to revisit it, I get like a cold sweat as I start to do anything. Like,
no, I know.
That's why I'm wearing black.
Yeah.
So it's okay. I'm like
Both of you have like kind of the taupe background and the black tops, and I'm like, no, I'm gonna be like a glitter and rainbow and some glass behind me. Perfect contrast. I love that.
I like it.
Yeah. So Mike, it's great to have you. Thank you so much for providing your time. And we did a little bit of an introduction about you, just kind of what you've done, what you're up to, what you're working on currently in some aspects. And then also we obviously are recording as we are going right now, kind of hop in candidly. It's funny, it wasn't really meant to be a format in terms of introducing someone prior to them coming on. It just kind of stuck. So we kind of like, well, we already talked about you, but we love our guests to give a little bit of an introduction to themselves and kind of work off from there. So anything you'd like to open up with, feel welcome to.
Okay. Well, I'm an extrovert that just survived 2 years of a global pandemic. So that's number one.
Okay.
Hey, congratulations.
Thank you. Wow. Not quite through it yet, but we're getting there.
I know.
I grew up in New Brunswick, in Hampton, New Brunswick. It's a tiny little town just outside of St. John, New Brunswick. Always was, you know, really creative and loved film. Film was kind of like one of my first loves. And then I loved the Olympics. I always loved the Olympics. I always loved figure skating. For the Olympics in particular, I love sort of the human interest stories of the athletes. Like, who is the athlete beyond the sport, beyond the rink, beyond the basketball court, beyond the tennis court? And so I always loved that. And so that kind of, I think, maybe encouraged my first love of sort of like factual or nonfiction storytelling. And always loved movies, like, you know, used to memorize all of the Oscar winners ever. Now my brain doesn't work that way.
I just saw one of your posts. I was like, oh my God, one of my favorite movies is also Being John Malkovich, and also is Muriel's Wedding.
I've been doing this thing on Sunday nights where I will literally go through and think of my favorite movies and then think of my favorite shots from movies, because I get the Sunday scaries. So I'm like, and I'm like, joy, you know? I eventually got into casting. I was always drawn to casting, how to find actors for particular roles, but then I kind of veered over to nonfiction and reality, and through that started working more in kids TV, and then made a connection and some friends at MTV Canada, and started doing this show back in the day called One Girl, Five Gays. I was on the first ever episode, which was and the last ever episode actually of that show. And it was that was a really groundbreaking show, because it existed, I think, in this little pocket of time. Like, after Obama had been elected, you know, we were sort of just in a new era after Bush, and then it was kind of pre-cancel culture, pre-social media, you know, when it was really what it is now, essentially.
Totally.
So it was like this tiny little pocket in time. I'm really grateful that I existed on TV in that period of time and not like now, because or years after, like, I think it would have been kind of damaging, I think, for sort of those formative years for me to have like the internet hate me or the internet like try to cancel me, you know? And from that, I worked, kind of moved over towards casting, The Amazing Race Canada, and have worked kind of on pretty much every big reality format in the country. I've done Canada's Drag Race. I've done Battle of the Blades, the figure skating shows.
My original
love of figure skating, and worked on Canada's Drag Race, which is great. And then about a year ago, I got a call. Well, a couple of years ago, I got a call to do this new version of One Girl, Five Gays, One Queen, Five Queers.
Love it.
So that was really, that felt really like a full circle moment to me, because it was really there at One Girl, Five Gays, and I kind of found my voice and found, you know, what I wanted to do, which was to tell queer stories and to tell, you know, stories of marginalized folks and, you know, folks who haven't, you know, had their stories told in mainstream media or, you know, in mainstream media in Canada. So to come back and cast that show and work on it last year was really amazing. And then I did 7 shows. I have to work that out in therapy. That's like a little learn to say no. You don't have to please everyone.
We've been there.
Now, when you say working on seven shows, are you predominantly casting? Are you producing? Is it a mix? Is it?
Yes. So that's a great question. I primarily do casting, and then I do work. But on some shows I don't. I come in and just do the story. And so story producing is basically all the interviews that get cut into the shows, basically following the narrative of what, you know, develops, you know, as we're seeing, you know, because you can sort of create, you put, you know, everyone always asks, like, is it scripted? Is it scripted? And I'm like, no, but you put people in hyper-produced scenarios and they're going to respond a certain way, right? So, you know, and so I do the story. And so I think the thing I did most in 2021 was interview people. Like, I interviewed people so much, including like 40 different acts on Canada's Got Talent, which was amazing.
Yes.
So it's been a good year.
No kidding.
That's amazing for somebody in your industry and how, you know, especially in the beginning of the pandemic, so much, there's so many unknowns and so much that was paused and, you know, I guess put on ice or however you want to put it. And it's amazing that you, that, you know, I like, was there ever a time, I guess now I can ask this question, within the pandemic or the beginning of the pandemic, that you questioned your industry or...
Yeah, that's a great question. I think a really good mentor, you know, of mine in the industry once said, I came in one day and I said, you know, I was working with him at the time and I said, oh my gosh, you know, like TV is going to be obsolete in 5 years and we're, you know, we're all screwed and we won't have jobs. And he said to me, you know, storytelling will always exist, whatever form it takes, you know, like how we consume will change, how we consume content, but storytelling will always need to exist. And you watch things sort of go through cycles. It's like, you know, now we're back to podcasts, which are
I know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a great kind of segue as well. So a little bit kind of how I know you from 1G, 5G, of course. And I was thinking about what you might've been up to today and was ecstatic that you were around and, you know, active, but seeing all the development,
We're in each other's heads all the time, by the way. We know each other.
You know how that could be interpreted, right?
I know.
Okay. All right. This is what Jews do. We talk over each other anyway, especially with mental health. But seeing the background that you've come from, you know, that is how I got exposed to you. And watching some other interviews and other questions you've asked, we also want to be mindful of, you know, keeping our discussion relevant to today and what's going on right now, and also learning about how you came from where you are. Because, you know, on our show, you can interview someone so much and ask them the same questions. It can be a little bit predictable or not relevant, right? So discovering you, learning about you, one thing that you were always came across as sincere, authentic, outspoken, and no bullshit. You were always this very you, right? And it's very hard to convey that on reality production shows, being myself watching Survivor and Onward since 8. You've probably heard that tons of times. But any competitive reality show since I was 8, and, you know, gay kid in Vancouver, I was like, this is my jam. It's my genre, right? And again, because of storytelling, because of learning about real people who are doing things that are beyond normal and that are actually getting their voice heard. And there are a lot of people, whether gay or not gay, queer or non-conforming, and those that might have mental health, anxiety, learning disabilities, that sometimes do feel in the shadows, that sometimes do not feel heard or emphasized as much as they might feel they deserve to be, and they're not sure where to turn. So with people like yourself in an industry and being part of productions and shows behind the camera more so now, and then in front of the camera initially, I think the power that we hold as leaders of storytelling is really important. And I think through the pandemic, even more so. So when you're talking about TV, you know, not really being obsolete, but in terms of the way that it's produced, the way that it's conveyed, the way that people consume it is very, very relevant. And so I just want to give you a lot of credit for that, because, you know, it takes the right kind of person and it takes the right kind of work ethic to say, I'm going to stick through this process. I'm going to do it. And I know what my voice is in the process to make sure that it's heard, even if it's through other people, you know? So I think that's pretty amazing.
Thank you. I absorbed that. That's very kind of you to share. I thank you very much for that. Yeah. I'm not great at accepting compliments.
Me neither.
I don't know. I absorbed that though. Thank you. I take that.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's from the heart, but, we would love to kind of learn more about your past and kind of what you've been, the things you've been through, whether if it's really in the childhood, growing up in New Brunswick. And then also we are all about mental health and nothing is off the table. We're very candid and uncensored. So we want to make sure that, you know, this is the place for you to let things out that maybe you don't always get a chance to. There might be things that people don't ask you about. And we're the kind of people that we just want to give you a big hug and, you know where you came from and who you are today. So, maybe take us a little bit down memory line.
Memory line.
Now I'm tripping on my words. A little bit on memory lane. Like you grew up in New Brunswick. Were you there for most of your childhood and teenagehood?
So I'm working on this new sports show right now. And it's going to be, it's going to be really exciting. But I've been talking to interviewing a lot of folks for it. And I said, you know, I kind of exist because of hockey. Basically my mom's American. My dad is from New Brunswick. He went to America on a hockey scholarship, met my mom.
Wow. Back in New
Brunswick. Yeah. So I kind of, I don't love hockey for many reasons, but I like am grateful to it nonetheless. I grew up in New Brunswick, a really small town. My mom was a theater teacher, of course, right?
No, I went like this also because my parents were musical theater performers growing up. So that's kind of near and dear to my heart. So continue, yes, please.
She's really, you know, my mom was kind of from 5 years old, knew she wanted to be a teacher. Like she just knew it. And so she didn't really ever do anything else. And I have really, inherited the gift of empowering and uplifting people from her, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I grew up there. I did a lot of theater growing up and, that was always a safe space for me. Sports was always a strange space because, I was good at them, but it didn't feel like my natural space, you know, and I think I tied a lot of my self-worth to being good at sports, like as a boy or as, you know, and so that was tricky for me growing up for sure. But theater was always great. And films really were how I learned kind of about the world, about pop culture, about history. You know, and I would watch anything. I would just go down to the movie store and just watch, like spend like hours there until they asked me to leave sometime. Like, sir, little boy, please leave.
Yes. I miss movie stores. It's just, there was such something so magical about spending, you knew that was an outing. You were going to spend time and, you know, peruse and go through all the videos. And then you would get, you know, super anxious because you're like, oh my God, is it in? Is it rented? Like, is there more than one copy? Like,
bring it back by tonight. 3-day rental fee, late fees. Yep.
Absolutely. Late fees. My mom, literally was not allowed to rent. She had four kids and she would just rent movies and just never return them. And so she'd be banned from all the, so anyways, that's an aside. I love movies. Movies are really, I think movies, figure skating Olympics are really my interest from a very early age, you know, before I knew, you know, what I knew what, you know, being queer was all about. Right. And so what's really interesting about me is that I've been able to kind of sustain those interests and been able to work on shows involving all of them, which has been
amazing,
you know? So, that's been great. And then, life in New Brunswick is really, really, people in the East Coast are so lovely, so nice, and very down to earth. They would literally invite you in, make you supper, you know, give you the shirts off their back. They're really lovely people. And I definitely inherited, I think, that East Coast sort of, friendliness, you know, for sure.
Yeah. Now, did you feel that same friendliness in the queer community as well in where you grew up? Like, was there any, or if you don't mind me asking, if was there any, growing up, how was that for you? You know, knowing you had that beautiful, lovely community, but also you felt that you were part of another community, which was LGBTQ+ community. Did that exist at the time? Was it something you felt?
It's interesting because I didn't, you know, I graduated, I'm showing my age here, but my skin does look really nice.
It looks fabulous.
It's all good. I guarantee you I'm almost the same as age as you probably too. So go ahead.
You look great too. I mean, your skin's beautiful.
It's the ring light, darling, and touch-up and the Zoom touch-ups. But yeah.
So I'm trying to think. I knew I was gay from probably, from around 8, 9, 10.
Yep.
And I remember having this sort of, thinking in my brain, like, oh, okay, this is just something you know, but like, you won't be able to be this way for a long, long time. Maybe ever, right?
Okay.
And yeah. I noticed that like even 5 years after I graduated, like openly gay kids were being elected to student council at my high school. But right. I was just that 5 years before that we were on the cusp of, people just really not still being okay with it. Mm-hmm. And, if you were like, there was only one out gay kid in my high school and he was tortured. And I remember thinking like, I can't have that happen to me. Like, I'm just trying to do my best and make it through. And so, I never really felt that there. I mean, I was involved in theater and my husband always says like, I don't know what's in the water where you're from, but like everyone you went to high school with is gay. And it's true. We like all ended up being gay or queer. And,
interesting.
Interesting.
Not just those that were part of the musical theater community. Like, you just mean in general of your graduating class, there seemed to be.
Well, mostly the musical theater people.
Yeah, I was going to say.
let's be honest.
Let's be honest, yeah.
No, that makes complete sense. And then in terms of when you were graduating from high school and stuff as well, and I myself, like I always knew I was gay, but again, kind of around, 10 or 11, when your hormones start to change a bit, you kind of have different contexts to articulate or to feel or to conceptualize different things about your sexuality. Were you out to your family and stuff, or did your coming out in that part of your life, which can be common, start more kind of like post-graduation, early 20s, and then kind of to self-discovery in more of a bigger picture? I'm curious about that as well.
Yeah, I mean, for me, coming out was always, like for being a very theatrical family and being a very theatrical person, I could not find the right way to come out. Like, it just it was just one of those things where I remember one time, I was in university and I was kind of living this dual identity. Like, I wasn't out to my family, but I was out at school, and it was tricky because I think people felt like, I think finally what happened was, is my friend outed me to my mom when she came to visit university. Mm-hmm. And it was, honestly, like it was what needed to happen. And we had to have a conversation about it. And I'm really grateful that it happened in that way, because it was one of those things where I think parents often are like, they want to give you space to say it, they don't want to force the conversation, but at the same time, sometimes like the child just needs the question to be asked,
they can't
take that kind of leap off the precipice to sort of like do it themselves. So, yep. That's kind of how it happened. And then, it was really interesting because I mean, obviously you feel free after it happens. You just feel like this weight has been lifted from your shoulders. And that was mine for me.
Yeah.
It was a long time coming.
Yeah. I can definitely get that. I mean, even I remember when I was not verbalizing that it was happening, my brother would always bully me, and I know siblings do that, but my brother was brutal. And I remember that my parents and my brother and I were sitting having dinner at the table, and for context, my brother passed away in 2005 from cancer. So he was still alive. He hadn't been diagnosed with like leukemia yet. So like he was still healthy. But based on how context and pop culture goes, people will throw slurs or throw things, especially back in what was that, early 2000s? It's not the same as it would be in 2022, right? Mm-hmm. And so I remember I just like got frosted tips, like most, gay boys do when they're 11, and I was still kind of overweight. and my dad and my brother were kind of egging each other on in relation to me making homophobic or related comments. And I started to cry, like really start to break down. And my mom was aware of the fact that, I was questioning my sexuality and was wondering what that was like. And I remember my mom standing up and saying, shutting my dad up, because my dad's a great person. He didn't do anything wrong, but wasn't educated. And my mom put my dad in his place and then put my brother in his place. Right. So you have those feelings of like, coming out, not coming out, or people feeling discriminatory or prejudice without even, sometimes not even knowing to be being having prejudice towards you, but it's different, especially generation to generation. So I can imagine growing mm-hmm. up in a very expressive family like yourself, and then going into a community, and then your friend outing you. I mean, I'm glad that it didn't feel like a traumatic situation by how you're mm-hmm. explaining it. It felt more like of a relief. I think that's actually quite fascinating.
Yeah, it was, you know, honestly, I think it was just one of those things that it was like a Band-Aid being ripped off. Like it just mm-hmm. needed to happen. And mm-hmm. once it did, it was like, okay, great. We're moving forward. You know, because mm-hmm. those conversations, I just remember also being like, I just didn't want whatever words, because they stick with you for life, right?
Like, yes, totally. They do. Yeah, completely. You
know, like anything someone says mm-hmm. in that moment, it just sticks to you so deeply, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the thing I was most terrified of like, how will they respond or what will they say in that moment? Yeah. And oh my gosh, I'm going back. PTSD here. No, but you know, honestly, it was, it's always that thing of, you know, my parents were both very accepting of it. And, you know, and like we had this my husband and I got married, I guess 6 or 7 years ago. We had this amazing wedding and both of our families mm-hmm. were there, and it was really, really oh. special. Mm-hmm. And you know, I had a moment that day where I was like, think back to your younger self, because you just didn't think that this was possible and you didn't think you'd ever find it. And I try to do that a lot where I'm like, just yeah. revisit younger self who was, you know, like there are moments when you're younger as a queer person that you think like, there's no one else like me that exists.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm the only one. I'm the only one like this, or, you know, or I don't think like for me, I was like, I know I'm this way, but I'll never be able to do anything about it. I'll never be able to, you know, or maybe I will, but it'll be when I'm like really old, like 60, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I get it.
So,
We've had so many guests on that have said something kind of similar. Like recently Corey Wade was on the show and he was like, is he 30? Is he 30 now?
He's going to be in his early 30s. Top Model Cycle 20 was when I was in. Yeah. So he would maybe. Be early 30s. He'd be early 30s.
My point is that he was just saying his boyfriend now, who he just adores. And he's like, I only saw very recently that it is possible to be yeah. in love and have a relationship and be with someone for the long term, and that I'm worth it. Mm-hmm. And that it's something that actually is a possibility. It's not just a dream. It's not just, you know, something that might happen. Like you said, many, many years later. So, and he's, you know, he's a little bit younger, and he's that thought process, or that for some reason, that notion still kind of exists mm-hmm. in the community. You know, it's getting better, but mm-hmm. you know, I wonder, I just, yeah, it still kind of exists.
To add to that, because I think this would be a really great segue, is mm-hmm. again, as queer people, and Rachel, even though you're not gay or lesbian or anything, but you are queer though. Like you have that knowledge and you've been around that culture. So you probably can relate to it as well.
Since I was a kid. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But like for me, I'm always dumbstruck when someone, even let's say in the context of the podcast, even if I might reach out to somebody, I've used this example before, I'm always completely dumbstruck that someone would actually be interested in coming onto a podcast with us. Reason being is that you are, as queer people or people that are non-conforming, you feel like sometimes you're so powerful, you have a voice, you know, your confidence, but no one around you seems, and Yerxa, you talked about this too, like you're seen, heard, loved, felt, or accepted, or that your voice does not matter. Your story isn't relevant because people can't relate to it. And it's those self-defeating thoughts and rhetorics that we as people in those ways of feeling and thinking and growing up in society, feeling so different, we always wonder like, where do we belong? Where will we belong? Are people going to understand us? Are we going to get the opportunities that we know we're worth, but others have never given us for whatever reason? And so I think as gay people or queer non-conforming people, we almost feel like that we are insuperior, insubordinate sometimes to others in communities that might pedestal themselves, or others that are given more attention because of they might have more accessibility, more relatability to a mainstream audience, right? I don't know if that hits any nails on the head, but it came to my mind.
Well, and coming full circle to you with storytelling and with, you know, what you're, and that's, I kind of hope that's kind of coming full circle to what you do for a living, which is amazing. So
I mean, what I would add to that is that I think part of, you know, I think there's a, you know, for queer, you know, for queer folks, I think there's a great divide in one's life. It's like before you come out and then after you come out, right? And so I think after you come out, and some people may never, ever come out, or they may never, you know, they never may never live authentically as themselves, or they may, you know, they may have to sort of, you know, participate in an aspect of queerness that they can't sort of proclaim, right? Right. In a way. And so I think, you know, but I think that when you do come out, you know, even if it's to a couple people, even if it's to one person, there is that after, you know, that sort of post coming out period, which is really all about reclamation and reclaiming, you know? And so it's like, you spend the rest of your life reclaiming, you know, your identity. It's why everyone says, you know, like, you know, gay identified men in their 20s, it's like their teen years, you know, they're just like, you know, they drink too much, they go out, they have too much, you know, anonymous sex, and, you know, they pick up at bars. And so, you know, for us, I think it's really all about, you know, and then I think in the process, really, it's tackling that trauma of that first path, right? Mm-hmm. So what we do is we, you know, we move forward, we get through the weeds, and then we go back and sort of start to kind of understand, unpack, you know, and it's not challenging because, you know, I started therapy during the pandemic and, and it was like, you know, like mind blowing. And my therapist, like I did the first session and I was sort of talking about how, you know, I give myself to a lot of other people, but I don't often, you know, take care of myself and blah, 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 blah. And, and then at the end of the session, like my therapist was like, well, now, Mike, I haven't heard you mention that you're gay. And, I was like, oh, but I love being gay. Like it's, you know, it's, you know, the greatest things in my life have come as a result of identifying this way. And then like two sessions later, I was like, oh, it's all because I'm gay.
Interesting.
All because I'm gay, you know? So it's really about, it's about reclaiming. But that's why I think when I did One Girl, Five Gays, I really found my voice in that. And I also found, I knew the importance of queer storytelling and just getting out there and telling our stories and how we have been, you know, there have been so many efforts to minimize us and to erase us and to limit our voices from even getting out there. So that's really when I found my calling and I said, okay, I'm going to do this in all my work. And really all my work since then has been, you know, to amplify and to support and to uplift, you know, queer stories, queer voices. And, and within that also, you know, trans stories, trans voices, and you know, gender nonconforming, and so it's been really gratifying, and yeah, I'm grateful for the reclamation, the period of reclamation I'm in right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's really cool to see. You know, even I'm not talking about reality TV, but in other sort of facets of television and film, and seeing, you know, if there is a trans character, it's actually played by a trans actor now. It's actually, those things are happening. That's very recent. Like, I want to say that's only really, I don't know, in the past
3 to 5 years, maybe 3 years.
Maybe.
I mean, Trans America, or what was it? Trans America, there was Felicity Huffman, and then they did Transparent with Jeffrey Tambor. Like,
I know,
right.
I know. Yes. I think it was really Orange is the New Black, probably with oh my god.
Yeah.
I just lost my
Laverne Cox.
What's her name? Yes. Oh, yes. Of course. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And I just recently saw her in Inventing Anna too, which is great. So yeah. So, I mean, are you in your industry, because that is happening the past couple of years, are you seeing, and are you happy with the direction it's going? Are you actually seeing that things are changing, or just because you are in the thick of the industry, do you feel like more can be done?
Great question. More can always be done.
That's true.
Right.
Number one, more can always be done. We have to always work towards, you know, Black, trans, and Latinx women of color.
Yeah.
Started the queer revolution. And,
they did.
We have to always be working from that point, right? If we're not protecting those individuals in our community, then like white gays just watch Drag Race and call it a day, you know, like.
Yeah. But it's true though. Yeah.
True. Yeah. Anyways. Yeah.
Yeah. You make a good point. And I think as a other aside, I mean, you look at Drag Race now, both in Canada, for sure. You think about Eve, you think about Alona. You also think about in the US season right now, there are five openly out trans queens who either came out post-production while the show's now on or openly trans as they came in. And I think that's really fantastic to see, because for someone like myself, you know, I don't have a lot of trans awareness. Like, I have a step sibling who identifies and is trans, and that's been a really great eye opener for myself to be able to be part of their life in that way, or her life in that way. But also seeing the dialogues that go around other people that are coming out more comfortable as trans, because it's kind of, in a sense, it's kind of like, now it is about trans rights, because people understand gay rights, they understand lesbians, they understand bisexual, even though in the States might be a bit of a different story right now. But, you know, there is more universal language, even if others don't agree with it. But trans, it's like, you know, that's what we're really fighting for right now. And nothing would make me happier than this, to see humanity be embraced as humanity without any label or any discrimination in that way. That being said, I mean, I'm coming at that as a Holocaust. Me and Rachel are both grandchildren of Holocaust child survivors and have intergenerational trauma and mental health, and I've got my sexuality. So, I mean, there's so many different facets that can be pulled from it. But I find those communities you highlighted on just a moment ago, those communities really need their voices amplified. Always. It shouldn't get to a point where they need to be amplified. It should just be the point where it's everywhere. You know, that's just how totally. Our culture is.
Unfortunately, there's still so many pockets of small, predominantly white towns and places in the States and in Canada that are still kind of ill-educated, if that's even a word. They're not. I don't even want to bring this up, but I'm going to bring it up. But even just think of the truckers rally. I mean, just think of, who's mostly predominantly, you know, in those types of protests. Anyway, we don't have to go there.
No, so yeah, something, though, there, you know, I think by virtue of people identifying as gay or queer, you know, they really, really think, oh yeah, like, I'm fine. There's still so much work to do within our community.
Yes.
And there's still so much like, even on high level shows featuring queer folks, there's still so much work to even be done in those spaces, right?
Yes.
So it's not like, and nothing will ever be perfect, except for Michelle Kwan, the figure skater. But besides Michelle Kwan,
I love it.
You know, nothing will ever be perfect, but we have to we can't, by virtue of being like, well, I identify as part of this community, think the work is done, right? If we're not looking towards, you know, those, in particular, those, you know, Black trans women, Latinx trans women, trans folks, you know, non-binary folks, like, if we're not working to help to support them, and not just in media, just in everyday life, you know, to create safe spaces to allow for them to come into their jobs or their workplaces and to feel safe and to feel validated and to feel like their humanity is respected, then, you know, like, we don't deserve to be in the same community if we're not really working to protect those individuals.
Yep.
Very well said. And and that brings up a question for me about, because I noticed on your Instagram profile, you have a link to Rainbow Railroad.
Yes.
And so that, so maybe speak about how maybe near and dear that is to your heart. Cause I feel like it is, you know, we're talking about safe spaces and people coming out. And I don't know if you want to speak towards that or to that.
Yeah. I mean, one of the best days I've ever had on any set ever was when we did the Rainbow Railroad episode.
Yes.
For season of Canada's Drag Race.
Yes.
It was very, very powerful.
Yes.
And it just, you know, it was the thing that I think everyone needed at that point in the production, because it really offered perspective. It offered, you know, it's like, here we are in Canada and, you know, we have this corporation that's paid, you know, tons of money to celebrate queerness and diversity in such a really, in a beautiful, colorful, you know, a great way. And here are these folks who literally, you know, left their entire lives behind to come to Canada. And so I think it was really It offered such beautiful perspective, I think, when we really all needed it. And it was really powerful. And it's like, you know, this is just to see those folks like in those, in that moment, walking the runway, having fun, you know, being so queer, you know, it was really magical. And so for me, it's really, you know, we have to always be working on the personal, but then we also have to be working on the larger thing. Like if we're not working towards some larger goal, you know, within our community or within society or the world, then, you know, I don't know why we're here, just to buy things and to watch TV.
Right. Yeah.
No kidding. Yeah.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, we might as well just live in a freaking, I don't know, cabin in the middle of the woods by ourselves and just not.
That sounds nice, though.
It does.
I mean, me as a city boy, even though Vancouver is a small city, maybe for me, not so much.
I know. Really? Okay, yeah, that sounds. Okay. I do too.
I'll take the opposite.
No, but, I adore that. Go ahead, Hero. Sorry.
No, not at all.
I'm so sorry. I'm so Canadian.
Oh, I know. We're so Canadian. Have a thimble of maple syrup for all the care. But when you were mentioning about being in therapy as well, that was something else that I learned about you from watching another interview you had. You can share whatever you like or deflect as much or just say pass, but what were some of the main takeaways so far in your therapy journey? Like I myself, because my parents knew I was highly anxious, had like non-verbal learning disabilities and stuff. They threw me into every therapy until I was basically out of high school. And I'm grateful for that now. But if you haven't been through like focused therapy or that kind of lens on yourself and talking about it, what are some of the intentions for what got you to go into therapy? And what are some things that you've learned that you find you've been able to apply into your life, let alone through the pandemic?
Yeah. I mean, therapy is to me, I just had never really prioritized it. Mm-hmm. Like for some reason, I kind of started, you know, when I started to work on larger projects, they would take, you know, I'd be on them for longer periods of time.
Right.
And, you know, and then you'd be kind of exhausted after you do a shoot. You just think like you kind of have nothing left in the tank, but then you'd start another project. So I never really prioritized it because there was always something else to prioritize instead. There was a trip or there was this or there was that, you know? Yeah. And so when I finally got into therapy, I have this incredible therapist. I love him so much. He's like, he is just really special, and he kind of calls me out on stuff, and or just not in sort of a challenging kind of way, but just draws things to my attention, you know, that you know that I say, or you know. And I think for me, it's really being a little bit more trauma informed, you know, that of my own trauma. And I also think it a major one for me is just, again, pleasing. Like, you know, I have such a need to please because it's so rooted in like deep shame from my childhood, you know? So I just, it's like, oh, I've got to be, you know, I've got to be everywhere. I've got to be doing everything. Right. And I think in the process of doing that, I don't take care of me in the right ways.
Yeah.
And so that's been great. And I think the other one is just conflict resolution. You know, I think conflict resolution is huge because we all get into conflict with, you know, loved ones and family members and friends. And it's really about, you know, when you do want to resolve conflict, like, you know, coming to a place of saying like, you know, the point of this discussion or, you know, us trying to resolve this is to get our relationship to a better place. Right.
Yes. And
so I think that those have been really invaluable. I also think, you know, my therapist will often say like, well, what does the evidence show? Like you say that about yourself, but what is the evidence? You know, like what is that common for you? And it's like, well, no, actually, like, you know, like at one point I said, I just don't want to come across as a misogynist, you know, when I was working with, a woman, and he said, well, has that been, you know, a pattern of yours?
Yeah.
We called out on misogyny before. And I'm like, no. And he's like, well, then.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of like, well, why would you think that? Is there a fact really behind that? And it's, you know, there's so many stories that we tell ourselves through external circumstances or how we were brought up. And it's just, it's these stories and this programming that we've had, you know, since God knows how, like 2 years old, 3 years old. I don't know. I mean, things that are so embedded in the brain that, absolutely.
But there's also a lot of patterns and behaviors that we inherit, even, I mean, honestly, when we are in vitro, you know, like even through conceptualizing when our parents actually like conceive us, when we're in there, once we become, I don't know how, like how long into delivery and development, like we are developing those things from the moment that we do, because our senses start to develop when we are in the womb.
Like, I must have been chaos from the beginning then.
Right? But it's true though. Not that I'm an expert, but I mean, when you go through 20 freaking years of therapy of all kinds, including dialectic behavior therapy, you're basically a walking therapist. Like I can go to a therapist. I tried, I don't know. My parents are like, my mom's like, go back to therapy. I'm like, okay, I went, couldn't do it. Because the self-awareness that I've been able to garner is so there, right? Mm-hmm. But what I'm getting at for that anecdote is when you build an awareness of trauma and you build an awareness of the things you've been through, you can then dissect how you grew up, the people that raised you, your social settings, what your parents did when you were a child, when you were a baby, what were you exposed to? There are so many things that we don't have control over until we get to so far along in our life. And I'm talking maybe like our early 20s now, probably, where you're like, holy crap, what is going on? Let alone to wake up enough to know that you might want to work on some things or people to bring it to your attention. So it's no wonder when you go and unpack these things and you don't know where they came from. They started as early as when you were in the womb. And certainly by the time you were five, you were basically formed. Like it's kind of
basically what you're saying is that you're going to have to go through 20, 30 years now of therapy to get over all the I'm just
kidding. Yeah, bitch, I didn't say a single thing.
Can I borrow your bank card?
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, come on, hopefully your productions will cover it. I mean, I know everything is on a contract, but by God, they better support it. It better be part of the contract budget. I mean, seriously, the kind of stuff you go through.
Okay, that brings, well, then in my mind, I was thinking about actually how lucky we are to live in Canada and have certain medical benefits, not necessarily with, you know, mental health yet, unfortunately, unless you have extended benefits. But that brings me to a question that I have for you. We're kind of shifting gears a little bit here, but maybe a little bit away from mental health, but a difference that you can see predominantly, because we actually asked someone this before, between US productions of shows you work on and Canadian productions of shows you work on, what's the biggest difference that you can see, or a couple differences?
Well, what I would say is that, this land is first of all, it's stolen land. we'll start there. It's really rich in a history of and tradition of storytelling. You know, in particular oral storytelling, you know, so, so I think, you know, in terms of, what we do really well in Canada, you know, we don't have the budgets that the US has. We don't have, you know, we're what, 38 million compared to 300 plus million, you know, so we don't have the budget. So what we have to do is we really have to rely on storytelling, and we have to rely on really good casting, and we have to, you know, so we've noticed this on Amazing Race Canada. It's that in the US version, that's all about, you know, there are people in America who will never get to travel. They'll never get to see the world, but this is their opportunity to see Japan, to see Brazil, to see, you know, South Africa. And and here it's in Canada, you know, it's more about, you know, it's really inaccessible to travel in Canada. It's also very expensive. And so it's to show Canada in a really beautiful light, and to show, you know, we have everything in Canada. We have the Arctic, we have three oceans, we have, you know, the Rocky Mountains, we have maritime fishing villages, we have, you know, Newfoundland, we have the prairies. So, you know, really what we have to rely on is less so the travel or the, you know, I'm a fish out of water kind of, you know, I don't speak this language. We really have to rely on storytelling of our great, you know, country and the people that are doing it and why they're doing it and why it's important for them, you know, why you want to root for them. When we cast Amazing Race, we always say any one of these teams could win. So any one of these teams has to be rootable. So you have to have some reason why you want to root for them. And so I think really story is what, you know, what Canada does incredibly well. I think, you know, I've worked on a lot of the larger shows, and, you know, and, we really rely on it. And I think we do it better than the US, to be honest.
in a lot of ways, I definitely agree with that statement, you know, especially the Amazing Race Canada. I mean, and I don't watch Big Brother, don't shoot me, but like, it's one of the competitive shows that I didn't get, actually chose not to get into because I knew I would get into it. So I sucked with Survivor because it was like Survivor, Big Brother, Real World. And then everything else came out, including shows that are great that are no longer around. Mm-hmm. But the Amazing Race Canada, honestly, is the best Canadian production that I will say as a reality fan whore that has come onto our production because of storytelling, because of great editing and scene capturing and presence. And that is exactly what you're hitting on. I actually looked into applying for the Amazing Race Canada because I feel that I would be a great fit for that kind of show, that kind of experience, storytelling and all that. But I don't drive or have a license. And that's not, why you would and need that me. Was a requirement. But, that's in the, why but somehow me. In the States, I don't need to know the production reasons why. But in the States, I have seen people that have that not. One did not have a license, the other one did. And if that wasn't the case, maybe that's what they showed on camera. Like, I can't drive, or like, you're doing all the driving. So I found something really odd with that, but I didn't like go and investigate, but just like, damn it, there's the one show that I could actually be okay at because I can run, I can talk, I have no idea about traveling, yes, you so can it'd talk. Be fun to watch me, but but I don't have to sew, I don't have to sit on an island, I don't have to learn how to cook, you know, like, or queer, if queer I had a Canadian version, I could be like a culture or fashion guy, but like, we don't have Queer Eye Canada, at least not yet.
I mean, there's what Germany, I know, just so this is so off, this is so off.
No, but it's topic, but it's kind of on topic.
Yeah.
know, but like I have someone that, and I kind of like one thing you mentioned in another interview is like, you know, why do you want to be on TV? Like, what's your reason for going on to a show? And, you know, for me, like, I don't know if Rachel, I'd be curious to hear your perspective. You know, for me, it's not about money or winning a prize.
What is your reason? What
is my reason is to tell a story. It's to share what things I've been through and be an advocate for those that might have not been around when I was younger, and to be an adult to those that I wish I had to look up to that are with mental health, with learning disabilities, that don't live a conventional queer lifestyle, that that are completely straight edge just by choice, who maybe have gone through grief and bereavement, things that are things that you don't look at the world in the same way with mental health and learning disabilities, but are high functioning and independent and living a life that is different, you know?
That's a really good point, actually. I don't know if I've watched the most recent Amazing Race Canada. I don't even know. When was the last season on?
2019.
Okay.
Anthony and James.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Then I did see that season. Yeah. But it's a good point. Like, mental health is at such the freaking forefront right now because of the pandemic. I mean, it's like, they're calling it like the second pandemic, essentially. Right.
Yeah.
Well, that and, you know, crisis of drug overdose and all that kind of stuff. But I mean,
mental health.
Exactly. Right. But it's interesting though, because, you know, when I think about mental health, like, I still say to myself, well, Rachel, there's no way you can't do that because, you know, you might have a freaking breakdown in the middle of like a mental, like some sort of meltdown in the middle of, I don't know, doing some task or some sort of competition in a show. But I actually think that that's almost something that should be highlighted. Like, it's, that's interesting. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. Just, I mean, I think the thing is that we've all come into these conversations about mental health, you know, particularly in the last decade, you know,
like,
you know, and so, in particular, you know, and so I think it's really, you know, I think it's, there needs to be more space to talk about it and to talk about struggles and, you know, I'm working on Amazing Race Canada is coming back, and I'm working on a new show called The Ultimate Challenge Canada.
Right. I saw that.
And so both of those shows, really, we're casting them, and we're cast on the race. And then this other show, The Ultimate Challenge Canada, is where we're about to be cast on. But you can really feel that people are, they're wanting these experiences more than ever. You know, they're kind of like just being like, let me get out there. But with that, there is sort of, you know, there are a lot of, you know, there are high stakes. So we really have to make sure that, you know, and so much of our, work is to try to create, you know, we can never exclusively create a safe space for everyone, but to try our best to, you know, and create dialogues and to know that there is support from our team, you know, and that's important, you know? So
Talk more about your new projects though. So please, because as we're kind of coming, like, what time is it? I can't believe we've been talking for this long, but we'll go to the present day. to present day.
Yes. So I'm doing this new show for a Canadian broadcaster. And it's called the Ultimate Challenge Canada. And it's going to be, you know, the way we've been sort of describing it is, you know, it's kind of like Amazing Race meets American Ninja Warrior meets celebrity coaching aspect of The Voice. So
what?
Oh my God, that's so me. Sorry, go on.
It's basically, you know, you come to this experience, you know, because it's kind of weekend warriors or people who want this, you know, this great competitive experience. And then in the process, you're coached by, you know, a Canadian athletic or sport icon.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Really cool. So,
you know, imagine you got to be guided through, you know, cross the country kind of journey by Wayne Gretzky, let's say.
Oh my gosh.
Wow. You know?
And so
really cool.
You get to absorb that wisdom, but you also get to sort of unlock your potential and, you know, really get pushed out of your comfort zone and just grow so much as a human. And I think the whole thing, you know, what I'm so excited about shooting this show, is that it's that thing of like, you know, a lot of people will start thinking they're going to Oz to see the wizard, and it's the thing they'll find along the way that will really, really matter. And the thing that is of true value, you know, and I've worked on a lot of shows, and when I start, I always ask, you know, like best case scenario, what happens to you during this, you know, during this journey,
right?
You know, and I love to check into those who've made it to the end to be like, you know, what did you learn? What did you discover? You know, what do you know now that you didn't know? At the beginning, right? And that was so gratifying because it's really, there's a moment of people, I think, you know, when people do look back on the whole journey, of real gratitude for it, you know?
Absolutely.
For whatever it's unlocked within you, right?
Mm-hmm. And it's probably so cool to also hear, you know, at the end of the experience, okay, well, how would you have ever thought that this is kind of how the experience would have ended in the beginning? Because I mean, I bet, you know, just the changes that you see in people is just phenomenal. So it's really, really cool. So have you casted that yet, or you're in the midst of casting?
So we have our coaches, and then we have our cast. Yep. So we're in the process right now of just confirming people, and,
awesome.
And it'll be really great. And I think it'll be like anything, you know, a new format in Canada, you know, that I think is developed here is really going to be a love letter to all of Canada. And you know, Canada, what is it, you know, 150 whatever now, and then Canada the many, many years prior to that. I think that's important to us. And then, you know, I think it's going to be, I'm so excited for it because I think it will be unlike anything anyone's really ever seen.
I'm super stoked to watch that. So I'm assuming, because, you know, you've got to film it, and it's probably going to not come out for, when can people expect it?
I don't know exactly, but I know that it's going to be happening. And it's going to be a really great project. I think,
fantastic.
You know, the cast is going to be, you know, when I did One Queen, Five Queers last year, it felt like a cast that hadn't really ever been seen before, you know?
Yeah.
And I think this is going to be, it's going to be another cast that I don't think folks have really seen before. So that excites me, and it excites me to, you know, to show actually what, you know, what Canada looks like, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. What I think is really a fun question to ask, and I don't know if people have asked you this, is of all the shows that you produce, if you could be a contestant in one of those shows, do you have one that you would prefer to be on, and why?
Oh, great question. I would not be in a reality competition show.
Yeah.
Okay.
I appreciate people who are competitive. I appreciate people. I don't know if that environment would bring out the best in me. I think what I loved about being on One Girl, Five Gays back in the day was that I could just come to it as my authentic self, speak to the things I was really passionate about, share my opinions, you know, and so much of that show was just like talking openly about gay or queer sex, which had been so stigmatized, you know, for us growing up and, you know, taught to mean a certain thing. And so that was really like, if I ever did on camera stuff again, which I won't.
Why not?
You know what? I feel like my power and energy is better used in storytelling. You know?
Yeah.
Fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm really happy that I had that experience of
being,
because I think it helps to inform me how to support folks in their experience on camera.
Yeah, well, it totally does.
Really good point.
And I totally understand that too, because I've had a little bit of experience. I was a not a contestant. I was a feature date on the first season of First Dates Canada. So I have an understanding of what a little bit of it's like for a single kind of segment show, but not in terms of a week-to-week production of a competition. But again, like having that experience of what it's like to be asked questions, have a backdrop behind you, or mm-hmm. be thrown into things that you don't know what's coming. And people are like chauffeuring you and telling you to be quiet or put a mic on you and stuff. It's like, well, shit, this is actually, okay, so this is kind of what it's like. So I can understand why you're like, I don't want to be in front of the camera. I'm better being behind and being kind of the conductor behind the scene and asking questions, storytelling. So one thing that I think would be really curious to ask you as well is for people like either myself or other folks that are interested in being part of a reality production, being a part of a show, whether it's applying or getting into the production itself, kind of how you are telling a story, like you have those public speaking skills. Maybe you don't have a post-secondary degree, but you have all this raw talent. Do you have any advice or insights for those, especially if maybe they're not in Toronto, maybe they're in BC, and maybe they're in Alberta? Do you have any insights for people like that?
When I got out of school, someone just said that gave me the advice that they're just like, email people, okay. meet up with mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. And I did, and people would meet up with me or would talk to me or, you know, and now Zoom is, you know, it's, mm-hmm. You know, there's a way of like not even having to leave your house to do it. Right. You know?
And right, so right.
I am kind of a firm believer. If anyone reaches out to me, just karmically, I always agree to meet up with them. If I have it, like, if I'm not shooting at the time, you know, mm-hmm. And I think that that's the thing. I think people are kind of out of reach or out of touch, or that, you know, that, mm-hmm. that you don't want to bother them. You don't want to take their time. You know, no one really went to school for any of this, right? Like some people went to school, they did the film school, but like, no, there's no school on how to be a story producer. You just do it. You know, you interview people and you become better at interviews. And then, you know, you train and mentor other people. And so I think really what my advice would be just to reach out to people that you respect in the industry, you know, they may, you know, and just say, could I buy you a coffee? Could I take you for a drink? You know, or, you know, do you have a half hour you could, I just want to pick your brain over Zoom, you know, and you'd be surprised. People are, in my experience, like people were always really open to that for me. And then on the flip side, I'm always open to people who want that for themselves, because people did it for me. Right. So
I love that. You're paying it forward.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you also mentioned a part of, again, that we lift people up instead of take people down. And I've always been, and me and Rachel and I, trying to correct that little phrase, but Rachel and I are always really lifting people up. Like that's our nature, you know, like we are former experienced full-time yoga teachers. So that's our job, is to serve and hold space for people. And in the same way as you do as a producer and being in the storytelling kind of way, it's a similar skill set that we have as being in front of other people and holding safe space for them to have experiences that let them open up in a very candid and free-spirited manner. So I want to congratulate you on all your success, what you are continuing to do, but also that I really look up to you, because I can see myself doing what you are doing one day in the future. And that's where I see my career going. And that's aside from having you on our show, but it's an additional reflection that I would only dream to be in a similar community and around creative queer folks that are doing things to empower, uplift, and amplify the voices of those that maybe weren't heard when they were younger. So I'm still figuring that out, but the podcast is kind of what we're starting with. But thank you very much.
Well, good for you. Like, this is the thing too, is like, there's a lot of work and effort that go into even tonight, you know, like, and
absolutely
and promoting it, and, you know, good for you for doing it. And just always check in with yourself that you're, you know, for me, I always work backwards. So, you know, mm-hmm. every day that I go to work, I'm like, why am I doing this? You know, and it's always like to tell queer and you know, Indigenous and Black and, mm-hmm. you know, Latinx and any marginalized story, you know, especially involving, you know, people with disabilities or, you know, any person who is marginalized, that's why I'm here. And that's why I hold this space. So I would just say, always come back, you know, when it feels like, you know, the mountain's too hard to climb, or, mm-hmm. you know, that you just, maybe you should try to do something else. Like, always come back to that central point, like that, you know, and then you, if you're working from that central point, and you know what it is so clearly, and it's clearly defined, then you're golden.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
If I could give you a hug right now, I would. My tear ducts are rolling up, but my heart is. So, yeah, that, thank you. That means a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is, I always just am so grateful for people giving their time. And I know it's 3 hours ahead for you too, isn't it? 9 o'clock, I think.
It's fine. You know what? Honestly, I had like some great interviews today and they really gave me energy.
Oh, so, good.
So by the good. Time, you know, this happened, you know, I just was full of energy today. Like, yeah. I had awesome. Two amazing interviews for this project. And so that helped. And you can sort of see the stories you're going to tell and you're like, this is going to be great. You know? So,
oh my gosh. Well, amazing. We can't wait to continue to follow you and to continue mm-hmm. to watch your journey and see the new shows and the episodes and all that kind of good stuff. And I know that people can follow you on Instagram. Is that correct? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we'll put that in our show notes as well. So I don't think I have any last little questions here. Oh.
No, just thank you very much. And
yeah, I've got a question for you.
Sure. Oh. Okay. Yeah.
So this is what I would do. This is how I would do it in an interview. I'd say, in two sentences, tell me what you've learned from having me on your show.
Oh, Lord. Okay. Two sentences.
Yeah.
Oh, you're putting us on the spot now. What are you doing?
Do you want me to respond first, Rachel?
I would have to say, you know what? Yeah, you go first, because there was something very poignant you said earlier that I'm going to have to just recall it. So yes, go for it, Hero.
That in a time of uncertainty for my own career path and the things that I'm passionate about right now, that I know I am going to be successful and that I already am successful, and that there are people out there such as yourself that are reflections and potential resources and advocates and allies of people like myself that might actually be able to help me in a very sincere way, even if it's just by dialogue or mentorship or coaching and dialogue. And that for me is invaluable. So those are two things that I can take up, many things I can take.
Good. That goes in the edit. Okay.
I love that. I would have to take away that, you know, there's certain things I didn't really think about between Canada and the US. You know, we think of them as such, you know, friends and neighbors, but just the fact that our deep richness in storytelling is so profound here in mm-hmm. Canada. And, you know, it actually makes me want to learn more even about Indigenous culture. Like, I don't know a lot about that. I think that in our, you know, we were growing up in Canada, going to school, they didn't do a very good job in educating us on the real culture of Canada. So, you know, what I got out of this is just wanting to continue to learn about fellow Canadians and really getting to know their stories and those that are marginalized specifically. And the fact that there's still a lot of work to be done and we'll continue to do it together rather than separate. So,
yep.
Yeah. Great.
Perfect.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for flipping the script.